Thank you, Councilman. I accept that applause not on the part of myself, but on the part of all Naleo staff who have been working tirelessly for the past 2 months in trying to get an event like this. We are very fortunate that we receive corporate support. As Councilmember Serna said, we have never, have not, will not receive a penny of government support. Everything that we've done to date has been by the members of the Hispanic community and its corporate friends. Last year, we opened up an office in East Los Angeles. And this office is in the heart of Boyle Heights, which is one of the oldest areas, Chicano barrios in LA. And we opened it up with one four-legged stool and a phone. And an individual came to us and he says, we're willing to support you in furnishing your office because we know that this your work you're doing insofar as promoting U.S. citizenship is so crucial to the Hispanic community. The office was fully furnished with good mid-executive and upper executive bank desks and files that actually work. And we're very grateful to an individual who provided all this assistance, Joe Pichardo from Home Savings of America. I'd like to have Joe come up here and accept a small token of our appreciation. Joe, on behalf of Naleo, thank you.
Thank you.
But yet we don't, there were two components to that, to those supporters of Naleo. One is our corporate friends, and the other is individuals who support Naleo with their labor and their effort. Somebody who started with Naleo back about 8 years ago, when Naleo was just a concept, and has been doing the books for Naleo, the financial, the nitty-gritty work for the past 8 years, is an individual we'd also like to express our appreciation to. I would like Phil Martinez, who is a former auditor for the White House, if he's here. Phil, are you here? Where is he? That's typical of Phil. This is a chance for him. And he is not here. We'd like to present Phil with his, in his absentia, with a little plaque. And finally, our host for this luncheon, Philip Morris, you should know that they've been hosting Naleo luncheons for the past 4 years. And Philip Morris was instrumental in putting together a Naleo dinner about 4 or 5 years ago in the city of New York, which drew about 500 individuals. They've also been very helpful in supporting our National Roster of Hispanic Elected Officials, that publication which many of you are listed in. And I'd like to repeat our acknowledgement and our gratitude to Philip Morris. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. I want to introduce just one more person that is in the audience from San Antonio, council member. And he was at our one of our hosts last evening, Walter Martinez. Walter? For those of you especially from California, or those of you especially from Northern California, let me give you... Those of us, I can't tell you what it feels like to be from not just California, but from Northern California. And you take a look at both Maria Antonieta's district and Walter's. Let me give you this is one small fact. Walter's district is 90% Hispanic. Maria Antonieta's is what, 78? 78, 79 Hispanics. For those of us from up north in California, man, this is Mars. I gotta tell you, those are really great numbers. California, before I introduce Maria Antonieta, who will introduce our luncheon speaker, keep an eye on California, okay? Those of you from Texas, those of you from everywhere. California is a very strange state, as Congressman Roy Ball will tell you. It's not that the Chicanos are strange, it's everybody else is strange. But we have, well, let me put it this way. California's unique. That's right. The politics of our state is real hard to deal with and real hard to make any sense out of. Kerry McWilliams, for those of you that care to read a little bit about what we do in California, either right or wrongly, but especially our history. A book entitled The Great Exception, which has been out for many, many years, really does tell a picture or tell a story about California and the difficulties that we have there. The mythology of the state is that we're a great liberal state, but when you take a look, even a cursory look at our history, you'll find that California is a fairly bigoted state. California is a very tough state, and California has had a very rich nativistic history, which very frankly has made it impossible in many ways for Latinos to get elected. So the few that we have is an enormous, enormous battle to try to get our folks elected. Our state, for example, even though there's a 3-2 Democratic advantage, a Democrat has, for the presidency, has not carried the state since 1948. I don't count 1964. That was a rout with Barry Goldwater and Lyndon Johnson. Harry Truman was the real last Democrat to carry the state. Even with a voter registration advantage, California has only had 3 Democratic governors, and 2 of them have been related. So, and the first one was elected in 1938, towards the end of the Depression, when the Democratic Party was running roughshod over the country, and Colbert Olson was thrown out after just one term. We're also strange in another way. Our political parties basically are dead as a result of the reform movement of Hiram Johnson at the turn of the century. So Texas is a real, to me, is a really unique place. Strong political parties, large Hispanic populations, a tradition, in some respects anyway, of some Southern liberalism. But we have the mythology going in California. So, you know, for those of us that are elected officials, from the local level through the state legislative level, through our Congress people, I got to tell you, the job that these folks do, just trying to get themselves elected in a state like ours, is one, goes against history, and number two, goes against statistics, and goes against political tradition. So that's why we appreciate Naleo so much, that it's able to bring all of us together from throughout the country and gets us once and for all to emphasize our commonality as opposed to emphasizing our differences. And it seems to me that that's what Congressman Roybal, with the establishment of Naleo, has done for all of us. So we really need you desperately in California to come to California, see what we're about. I hope that we can host the Naleo conference someday in my hometown in Sacramento. Enough said about that. Those of you who took offense at my California statements, hey, I kick my dog, but nobody else can. Now, I want to introduce Maria Antonieta Berriozabal. What a great name, I got to tell you. Those of you, my wife is a linguist, and I'm always told that English, when you speak English, you speak it in the front of your tongue. So lazy speakers, you kind of spit English. With Spanish, you really have to roll the tongue and get some exercise. With Maria's name, you really got to work out the tongue. So at any rate, Maria is also, by the way, sorry, Maria. That was meant as a complimentary statement. You know, you always know when you're in a room full of raza, you know that? Anyway, Maria, by the way, is also the president of HALO, which is our Hispanic elected officials organization inside the National League of Cities. So those of us who work in municipal government, HALO is also beginning to develop a host of issues that affect municipalities throughout the nation. And Maria has done a wonderful job of putting that organization together and putting our agenda forward in terms of the National League of Cities. I'd like to have you greet her, Maria Antonieta Berriozabal, who will introduce Gloria Molina.
My name is very difficult, so one of the pleasures that I have is to always pronounce it after I have been introduced. So I'll get to pronounce it because it still was not the way it should be pronounced. My name is Maria Antonieta Berriozabal. The accent is different. And it's a very beautiful name. It is my very distinct honor. First of all, joining my colleague Walter Martinez from District 5, whose Hispanic population is 95% Mexican American.
He missed it by
5%. And I would like to welcome you to our city, and we hope that, oh, I see Christine Hernandez, also a member of the San Antonio Independent School District Board. Christine, we all want to welcome you to San Antonio, and hope that you're having a good conference, and hope that you will come back just to have a good time. This is a good city to come and bring your family and enjoy yourselves. It is my very distinct honor to introduce to you the speaker who is going to discuss the new administration, public policy, and the Hispanic community. We have been talking about many issues in this conference. We will discuss more this afternoon, and as we go back to our communities, we will be about the business of representing the constituency who elected us. And 1989, January of 1989, will mark the beginning of an administration, of a new administration in the White House. Hopefully, through our efforts, we will get the person that most of us feel is the best person to represent the Hispanic community. So we are going to be in a very good situation to negotiate and to be able to represent our community. And I cannot think of a better person to be able to focus on what this means and what the issues are. You were given a little sheet of paper with the photograph of Councilwoman Molina and her biography. So I'm going to ask that you read it, and that you take it home, and that you save it. The biography of Councilwoman Molina is something that you need to keep in the context of what it means. And I say put it in your scrapbooks because it will be important for your children and for your grandchildren. And as you listen to her right now, I want you to keep in mind that Councilwoman Molina is a voice for a very large segment, a very large population of Hispanos in the United States. One of the largest concentrations of Hispanos in this country is in Los Angeles and in the district that she represents. She was elected in 1987 to her city council seat, and as was indicated before, she had been elected before in 1982 to the state legislature. She has shown what a woman con inteligencia y con prudencia, que se sabe expresar y que sabe representar a su gente, puede hacer. She has worked hard. Her strong points are many, but one that I admire deeply, I have heard people talk about her, I have talked to her constituents, I have talked to her, and what I admire most is that she is an elected official who has kept her anchor con la comunidad. So when you listen to this lady, know that she speaks for Hispanos and for Chicanos, for Latinos, not only in Los Angeles, but in the United States. And it is also with the following that we should listen to her, that we in Naleo are about supporting each other as public officials. And we also went through the battles of getting people registered to vote, eliminating barriers, okay? And those of us who are public officials have to be very appreciative of people like Councilwoman Molina, because people work hard, put us in office, have to do a good job for them. And this is a lady que es un orgullo para nuestra gente, por su preparación, y por lo que nos va a decir. So I would like for you to welcome a person that is a very, very distinguished elected official that represents not only her constituency in Los Angeles, but that I consider one of the brightest stars of Latinas and Latinos in the United States, and who is going to be one of the people that we need to support as we go into the White House in January and start negotiating for our people. Gloria Molina.
Muchísimas gracias. I want to thank Maria Antonieta. That was certainly a very nice introduction. also it made me very, very nervous, all these responsibilities she was placing on me. But she and I have worked together, and we sort of have a very similar style about addressing issues and confronting issues. And I don't know, from the very beginning, we've been able to relate to one another, and it's always wonderful to come to San Antonio and see her. But more importantly is when you get to see her in all of the other kinds of forums as well. I like her style, and she's certainly a real promise for all of us as well. I'm particularly pleased that Naleo asked me to be here, to be with all of you. I know that Naleo has friends all over, and its membership is reflected of those people that are passionate participants within their own community in important public policy issues. But most of them are elected officials throughout the country. And I'm sure that as elected officials, they understand very clearly how important it is to belong to a network like Naleo, the kind of strength that it presents because of our collective power and what we really represent and what we can do for one another. In particular, I want to thank Naleo because I know that most of you have had the newsletter and read a lot of the information. But Naleo this past year has probably taken one of the most aggressive action agendas ever in the whole area of immigration and citizenship and all the programs that it's promoted. And I think that Naleo should be congratulated and should be thanked. I think we're all very proud to be members of Naleo and to go out and continue to support and promote Naleo, and particularly to thank all the corporate people and all the foundations that have been so helpful in funding Naleo so it can keep its good work. But it's important. And it's put together this conference. It's not a first-time conference. It's a sixth annual conference. And it put together a conference, and what I've heard from a lot of the conference participants is that the workshops have been tremendous, that the participants, that the workshop leaders, that the materials that they've provided have really been exceptional, and that they have addressed, I think, and if you look at the agenda, some very, very good issues that need to be addressed by leadership, and certainly they need to be pursued and put into action and create the kind of strategies that are going to move forward. With me, they asked me, I guess, to talk about the new administration, about public policy, and certainly the Hispanic community. And it made me wonder about what kinds of things I should address and what things we should talk about. And the only way that I can begin that process is to start really thinking about what is the new administration for us and what does it mean. For all of us, I think we clearly understand that it presents to us a very new opportunity, a new opportunity for us to begin the process of negotiating the important and critical issues within our community, hopefully to an administration that is going to be more sensitive than all of the administrations in the past when it comes to our Hispanic issues. That we're going to have an opportunity to present the kind of public policy that is so critical to all of us, and that we're going to see an administration that is going to respond in an effective and efficient manner. I've had an opportunity to work in past administrations under the Carter administration, and I must tell you that I was not satisfied. I don't think they did enough, and certainly this past administration has not done enough. But whether it be the administration in Washington, D.C., or whether it be our administration at local government or within our state legislature, no one is addressing effectively and efficiently the agenda issues of the Hispanic community. We are continuously ignored, continuously ignored. If you look at the facts and the figures and the information, it says we are continuously ignored. Now, some will say, look at all the elected officials that we have today. Look at the kind of progress that we're making as far as higher education, as far as the various professions, and so on. And we applaud those efforts. Those have been wonderful, and they've been brought about because leadership, Hispanic leadership in the past, acted very aggressively to make sure that those kinds of things started changing, that they were a part of making that kind of a difference. But if you evaluate today what is going on, There are many, particularly in our grassroots community, that will say that not that much has changed. And they don't sit around and pay tribute to the number of Hispanic elected officials. They don't sit around and pay tribute to the number of scholarships that have been awarded, because in the streets and in their barrios, they are dealing with the same kind of problem that they have been dealing for decades. It has not changed enough. And whose responsibility is all of that? I think it's all of us collectively in many, many ways. You know, and we have to start evaluating and looking at that kind of reality ourselves. When you talk to an audience like this and when you talk into any kind of forum, it's always very difficult to try and communicate yourself because you're sort of reserved about what kinds of things you should say. You know that the media is around and they're going to misinterpret. They're not going to understand. Many times when you address these kinds of realities, people look to you and say that you're being critical of your own community and so on. But in order to address a real opportunity for the new administration and what our role will be, we need to deal with some realities within ourselves and begin the process of trying to make those important changes, or guess what? That new administration is going to continue to ignore us, as it has in the past. If you look at the statistics, and you know, I brought them with me, but I'm sure you're not interested in listening to all of those numbers over and over, we've seen progress, but we still continue to see various problems. I think that some of you attended the workshop on high school dropouts. Those figures are amazing, are they not? To see that we have a 50% plus high school dropout rate for Hispanics in this country is disgraceful. We should be so angry about that. We should be absolutely hostile about that kind of situation. How is it, how can we begin the process of changing that, and what are we going to do? And I know that many of you understand clearly what the problem is and work in your own areas, in your own arenas, to bring about those kinds of changes. But unfortunately, the political powers still don't understand what the impact of those kinds of figures, of that data. If you have an opportunity, and I don't, and they're putting a new book together, and I've had an opportunity to read a lot of what they've been doing. There are two professors in California. One is David Hayes Bautista, who used to be at Berkeley, is now at UCLA, and the other professor is Jorge, I'm trying to remember his last name, Jorge Chapa is the other professor. They put something together about 5 years ago called the Hispanic Portfolio. And what they did is they're basically demographers, they're statisticians, and they started looking at the 1980 census, and they started taking out all of the Hispanic figures as far as the census. They started looking at all the current data. And what they also did is they started projecting that into the future. And they did various scenarios, and it's laid out, at least in the Hispanic portfolio, it's laid out as any other kind of business portfolio. They are publishing a book. It'll be the Hispanic megatrends that'll be coming out, and hopefully you'll have an opportunity to read that. But as in the Hispanic portfolio, what they do is they take the statistics of today, of our present public policy, and I mean what's happening in education, what a 50% plus Hispanic dropout rate will mean in the future, what our unemployment rate will mean in the future, the economic data, the health data, and so on. And they projected it in the year 2000 and the year 2020. And then they drew various political scenarios. And of course, one was, if we were to change our public policy today and make corrections in all those kind of areas, what that would mean. And of course, if we made gradual changes, what kind of implications that would have. And then finally, if we made no changes at all, the kind of implications that that would have. Now think about it as they wrote it, and I'm not going to outline the whole thing, but basically a 50% high school dropout rate in California is huge. I mean, the number of Hispanics, of Chicanos in the state of California is unbelievable. It is growing every single day. And the high school dropout rate is continuing to stay as is. It is not decreasing. It is only increasing in the numbers. These are people that are not even completing a basic education. So consequently, they're not even going to be able to secure a very basic job. Consequently, they're not going to be part of that taxpaying group. And what is going to happen as we project ourselves into the future, certainly in California, is we have the potential of real political chaos, because you're going to create a bigger and bigger separation of the haves and the have-nots. It's a political reality. I took that Hispanic portfolio, the slides, I took the professors up to Sacramento. We set up a session with state legislators in Sacramento, chairpersons of the Education Committee, chairpersons of all of the proper committees that could be at the forefront of changing that policy today, to listen to this presentation, to understand the implications, and how they could be the ones that would be making that important change today, and if not, the kind of situation that California would be facing in the future as far as its economy, as far as its all of its social programs and so on, but more importantly, its politics. They did not understand it. They weren't even tolerant of listening to the whole discussion. They didn't even take the material with them that was presented. It was disgraceful. I know I was very annoyed about it, and I talked to a lot of members of the state legislature at that time. And what I guess burned me the most was the fact that other Hispanic legislators who were there should have been equally as angry as I with the non-Hispanic members of the state legislature for ignoring that important information. But not much was done, not much changed, and we still have a very high Hispanic dropout rate in California. And we haven't done enough in that whole area. But what it does address is address what we do as far as our own leadership. Why is it that we are not stronger and more aggressive in making sure that non-Hispanic elected officials are addressing the critical and important issues of our community? Why do we stand back and say, well, maybe this is not the appropriate time, and maybe they'll do it through another forum, and gee, you know, I can't be critical of him or her because they've been doing a good job up to now? That's nonsense. We shouldn't tolerate that at all. Because I'm telling you, back at home, our community is very angry about those kinds of figures and those kinds of statistics. And they elect people like me and you to represent their interest in those political arenas, and to defer and to dismiss it and to say maybe next time it'll be on the agenda is disgraceful. Not only to ourselves as elected officials, but to the community that we represent. So consequently, what I'm saying, that this new administration, whether Republican or Democratic, can be an opportunity, but it'll be meaningless if we act like a group of wimpy elected officials that are going to tolerate to be patted on the head and to have our issues dismissed, and to have public policy deferred, to have it reviewed and studied, and all the other nonsense that they tell us. And we're going to be a disgrace in our own community. And that's intolerable. It truly is. This new administration, again, whether Democratic or Republican, has to have a Hispanic cabinet member. Must have. And it has to come from us to make sure that that happens, that we will tolerate and allow no less. And when they appoint, hopefully at least one, but probably more if we can do it, that we're going to have someone in there who is going to be aggressive about the important issues within the community. I don't want a Chicano, Chicana, Puerto Ricana, Cubana in that cabinet if she's going to wimp out, if he's not going to confront, if he's not going to stand aggressively on the critical issues of our community. Because the worst thing is they're going to bring him and her and parade her around and tell us, look what we got you. Y con eso se quedó. That's nonsense. So consequently, we need to be aggressive today in making sure that within our own communities, within our arenas, we are equally being as aggressive in those issues and being totally intolerant when someone tells us to wait a little while. In 1982, when I ran for the state legislature, I remember all the people that told me to wait. They said, next time, Gloria, you can run for office. Not this time. They said, why don't you wait and we can unify it together and then we'll all be together. If I would have waited, I wouldn't have been elected today, and I know that for a fact. The same thing when I ran in 1987. They told me, not the thing to do. But if I wouldn't have run, if I wouldn't have taken that risk, I wouldn't be sitting on the city council today and addressing and confronting some of those issues that need to be addressed today. And I think the same is true for most of you that have run for office. Aren't there many that tell you to wait? Don't take that risk. What for? We need to act aggressively in every single arena. And I know more recently, in pursuing some of the issues, in California, I've been a part of something of trying to stop a prison in East LA. I'm trying to make it a national issue, so I'm going to share it with you. But basically, it was that the state legislature was going to put a state prison in LA County, and guess where they were going to put it? In our community. Along with all the other five prisons that we already have in East Los Angeles. And it wasn't important to them to listen about the overconcentration issue and to look about the disparity and all of those kinds of things. It was a total disrespect to our community. And I was told at that time when I began my fight against the most powerful leaders in the state legislature that it was a no-win issue. Don't go through with it. You're not going to get anything. You're going to lose anyway, so what's the use? I remember when the governor called me in and talked to me and tried to compromise some legislation, of course it was my high school dropout bill, on this particular issue. And it was basically either I sign the bill and get your support or I don't sign it. Well, he never signed it. But he also never got his prison in East Los Angeles. And it continues to be that way with all the issues that we address. Just recently, just on the council this past Wednesday, we addressed an issue I usually don't get involved in this end of it, but it basically dealt with a financing team of all the, God, I don't even know enough of the terms that go with it, but all the people that put together the financing packages for all our bonds and all of that. And of course, you have all the major companies coming in and competing. Well, California, or LA is very, very proud that they have a good affirmative action record, that they really get involved in minority procurement and affirmative action. Look at the figures. Our community is not there. Other minorities are very well represented. Hispanics are not. So I decided I'm going to make an issue of this. They had 45% minority participation in that proposal, but no Hispanics at all. So I questioned it. I went to a lot of folks within the city and said that I was going to challenge it. And they were a little bit nervous, but not quite. They basically say, hey, take your best shot. And then after that, I started organizing some people against it. I went around lobbying the other council members and said I was going to make it an issue. And some of the council members said, you know, it's better if you not do it. And, you know, we would prefer that we could next time when we get one of these, we'll do it. But not right now. Don't raise that issue. And I said, I'm going to. And you can choose to do whatever you wish to do. If you vote against it, You'll be voting against the Hispanic community. That's your choice. But I am going to raise it, and if I even don't get a second, if I don't get another vote, that's not important. It needs to be raised, it needs to be discussed, and you can vote yes or no. That is your decision. But I knew that it had to be confronted, and very frankly, I thought I was going to lose on Wednesday because I didn't think there would be that pressure. We were successful on Wednesday. Surprised me completely. We forced them that now they had to have a majority firm, and within the minority aspect of it, there was going to be Hispanic participation, that it was going to be equal, and it was going to be shared. And very frankly, it was such a simple fight to make it happen. But we're not doing enough of that. We're not being aggressive enough as leaders. I really would like to encourage each of you to really look at our roles and to look at each other and be aggressive about confronting these important issues. I know that my community in the East Side and in the whole Northeast area are very supportive of me. They really are. And I know that they've done studies and reviews, and they talk about how very loyal the Hispanic community is of their elected officials. They truly are. I think Congressman Roybal knows he's enjoyed that kind of support and that kind of loyalty for years. And I'm honored to have that kind of following within my community, but it presents a tremendous responsibility as well. And so consequently, any time that I don't act aggressively on their behalf, I am letting them down. And we cannot afford to do that at any level. As elected officials, as Latina leaders in this country, we must remember that. This new administration will not respond to us unless we remember to be persistent, to be absolutely dedicated, to certainly be well-informed and present our issues and move forward, but more than anything else, to act extremely aggressively about our agenda. They will respect our participation. I know that they will. To not defer it, to not dismiss it, and not to wait around for someone else to do it. We need to take on those roles. And we need to do it, if need be, in a confrontational manner. If they're not going to listen, and I don't want to make any apologies to anybody, we have to force them to listen, because it's intolerable. We do not want to have future Naleo conferences discussing the dismal figures that we have today. We need to start making sure that public policy in the next couple of years are going to quickly start addressing and making the corrections so that our community is going to be a full and equal participant within this country. And the only way it's going to happen is by us exercising the leadership that we were elected to carry out. It doesn't happen enough. I challenge each of you, as well as I challenge myself. We need to move forward in this direction. We can do it, and I don't think we should be intimidated at all by any of the hurdles or any of the barriers that are there. If we remain united, if we remain dedicated, ever persistent, we're going to bring about those important changes, and more than anything else, be equally as demanding of each other. I don't want a wimp in the White House. I don't want a Hispanic wimp in the White House. I do not want to have a Hispanic wimp paraded through this country, and I'm supposed to be grateful for it. Don't let it happen this time at all. We need to be demanding, as I said. We need to be aggressive. And believe me, we are going to be so successful. And more than anything else, we are going to have a community that's going to respect its elected officials, that is going to join us, that is going to register to vote, that is going to go out there and vote, and that's going to start making the kind of differences that we're all about. Se puede hacer, I know it can, and it depends on all of you in a assuming that kind of leadership role that is not going to be intimidated by the risk, but is going to recognize very clearly the responsibility and move forward and make it all happen. Thank you.